Today's program is brought to you by Brooklyn Slate Company, a manufacturer of slate cheese boards, coasters, and other fine items. For more information, visit brooklynslate.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
It's 7:30 p.m. Welcome to Metropolitan Ave. I'm your host for the next 40 minutes, DJ Lady DM. If you're tuning in for the first time, Metropolitan Ave brings you the best independent musical talent, most of whom are discovered performing in non-traditional venues here in New York City. If you miss our live broadcast, you'll find us archived on the heritageradionetwork.org website. And for those of you on the go, pick us up as a podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Tonight's in-studio musical guest is People versus Larson, who will be performing tonight. Welcome to Metropolitan Ave.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Please introduce yourself, name, and instrument.
My name is Tom Larson, and I'm the guitarist and vocalist in People versus Larson.
Awesome. I'd love to let our audience hear why I asked you to come on the show. Do you have a song for us?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
I said, you know, I know you like it, baby. Yeah, when I talk to you like that. I said, I'm a skinny man, girl, but you know, it's a trap. I like big leg boom. Just as sure as I know my baby. I said, you know, the way that woman moves, it's a low down, dirty shame. I said, you know, the way that woman moves, it's a low down, dirty shame. I said, you know, the way that woman moves, it's a low down, dirty shame.
Thank you.
What's the name of that track?
Big Leg Woman.
Who's it by?
That's by me. Yeah, I wrote that song, yeah.
I want to start with your background. What planet are you from? How did you get your start in music?
Well, I'm pretty sure I'm from planet Earth. Pretty sure, as far as I know, from planet Earth. I don't remember being born, so that may or may not be true, but I believe I'm from Earth. I grew up in Hartford, Connecticut, West Hartford, Connecticut, and started playing music. Well, I started singing in church. As a kid, that's how I started singing. And then I started playing guitar when I was 12. You know, got serious about it when I was like 13 or 14. You know.
What do you mean by got serious about it?
I got serious about playing the guitar after I sort of like listened to Jimi Hendrix seriously for the first time with headphones on. And I'd heard it before when I was younger. You know, but once I was like sort of seeking out what I wanted to get out of music. You know, when you're, you know, coming of age, kind of, you know, 13, 14 years old, you sort of start to figure yourself out a little bit. And I realized that I needed to seek out music in my own way, you know, and get satisfied with it in my own way. So I started getting into Hendrix and into the blues and stuff like that. And once I heard Hendrix, I knew I wanted to be a guitar player. And, so then I started studying jazz in school, you know, went to college to study jazz, and then...
Where'd you go to school?
SUNY Purchase. Yeah. Yep. And then I moved to the city and thought I was going to be a jazz guitar player, and then wound up becoming a blues guitar player and band leader. Sort of just revisited it, you know.
I'm going to jump around a little bit. What are you thinking about when you're playing? Because you have this, like, really contagious joy and smile on your face.
Oh, thank you. Oh, man. It depends. There's a lot to think about. It depends on, yeah, where I am, I guess, and what's happening, you know? Mostly, it's like, when you're playing, the optimum situation is for you to just be hearing the music as you play it. So what you're thinking about is you're listening to music in your brain, and then you're each moment bringing that out into reality, you know, hopefully.
What you're hearing in your head are the notes you want to hit.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you improvise a lot, I'm assuming. You're just going with the flow.
Yeah, it's all improvised, actually. Like even on the song that I just played, you know, the way that I just played it is different than how I play it with Dave and Dylan.
Dave and Dylan for our listeners who don't know? Because I was going to mention them as well, because I've only seen you with
Dave. My bass player and my drummer.
Yeah, they're awesome. How'd you guys meet each other, and how long have you been playing together?
Well, I met both of them through the jazz scene sort of randomly. And then when it came time for me to like start my own band, a mutual friend of me and Dave's, who's a bass player, introduced us. And Dylan, I met Dylan when I was in college. We played a restaurant gig together. And then I didn't see him because he went to Manhattan school, so I didn't see him for a few years. And then when I went to start my band, I called him up and started hiring him. And then he's the main man, you know. So
you must have booked quite a few gigs as a guitarist.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely was started. So yeah, I would say basically about 3 years ago, because it kind of takes a minute to get reacclimated to reality after you graduate college, and it takes a while to get gigs together. So when I started getting gigs, I was, you know, a jazz guitar player. Thought I was going to be a jazz guitar player or something.
Were you going for actual, like, live gigs or...
Yeah, I was.
Through studio recording, or what was your goal at the time?
Anything that I can make, like, $20 on, I would do it, you know. Yeah.
I understand you just started singing 3 years ago?
Well, I just started performing as a professional singer 3 years ago, I would say. I mean, and I kind of, yeah. I sang a lot when I was a kid, actually, like in church. My parents were both pastors, and we had a very small church, which meant I had to be in the children's choir, and I had to sing loud.
What denomination?
Lutheran.
Okay.
So that's why I had to sing loud.
So the folks up in somewhere in Hartford, Connecticut would know who you are if I just dropped into town and started asking about Tom Larson.
I don't know about that. I went to a small church, you know. It was like 80 people every Sunday, you know. But, yeah.
And how would you describe the story? Like, how did you discover your voice? I mean, after the fact of singing.
Well, it starts with my friend Cyril Amy, who is an amazing French jazz vocalist that is one of my best friends and someone who I've been playing with for probably about 8 years on and off. And she's very incredible, and I, you know, have a lot of esteem for her, you know. And when we were in college, she just heard me sing to myself, you know, heard me sing the blues to myself. So one time we were actually playing a gig in Italy, and that was the first time that I ever sang the blues in front of anybody on a gig. She just called the blues like a country, like blues, you know. So I was like, okay. And then she stuck the microphone in front of my face and just made me sing, you know.
How big was the audience?
I was like 25, 30 people. Okay. Packed into a very small restaurant in Italy.
What city?
Perugia. It's in Umbria. It's like where the Umbria Jazz Festival is. Yeah. That's a good story, too. That was when I was like 20. And, or 19. And I was 19. We just went, we got Uriel passes. She's from France, obviously, so, you know, she kind of showed me around, and we got, you know, train passes and didn't book any other thing. There was like six or seven of us, three guitars, a saxophone, and a singer, and we just went around and played on the streets and made euros.
Made euros, not dollars.
Sort of. We were pretty smelly, though, by the time we got to Italy. We were playing that gig. I was really surprised. They asked us back, but they had us play every day for a week, for, you know, all day. We played all day, and they'd feed us.
Put you up, I guess. How was he?
No, the first time we went, we put a tent up in front of this church, actually, which wasn't really a good idea. We had to certainly fend off aggressive robbers and things like that from time to time. But, I mean, it's one of those things where you just enjoy the experience. The next year we went back, they got us a place to stay. And they even got us a plane ticket and stuff like that. So we were from rags to riches, you know.
Yeah, moving up in the world, to say the least. That's awesome. Has the switch in genre from jazz to blues, or essentially from instrumental to lyrics, has it played an equal part in the sound? Sorry, has it required a change in how you approach music?
Yeah, because I now have two instruments with which to understand music. And when you play an instrument, you sort of understand music from the angle of your instrument. Like this guitar, like, you know, most of the work that I was getting when I was getting gigs was as an accompanist to horns or singers, you know. So you don't think about melody as much. You just think about chordal structures, harmonic structures, and you think about forms and things like that, and improvising too, you know, but you improvise in a different way. You're a supporting cast member, basically. Whereas when you're singing, you're directing the band, or you should be directing the band at all times, I feel like, if you're singing, unless you're singing backgrounds. But if you're, let's say, leading the band and you're singing, you know, then you're, and if you're, you know, singing and playing guitar, then you're certainly directing a lot of what's happening. So I learned how to take charge with things, you know. I learned how to steer the music in the direction that I want to go, and I also just kind of have the ability to sort of listen in and focus on what's happening in the room and sort of react spontaneously to that, you know. So, yeah, I think it gets you more connected with melody, singing, for sure.
Well, let's get reconnected and reacquainted. Do you have another song for us?
Yes, I do. Oh, this is called When I Call You. And it's actually, we're going to be recording it in about a month and a half. So we're excited about that. And Big Light Woman, too. We're going to be recording that.
Where are you recording?
We're recording at my friend Dev Avedon's recording space on Roosevelt Island. It's cool. It's like 25 stories up, and you know Roosevelt Island.
Yes. Not many New Yorkers do, though.
Yeah, it's like two avenues wide. Skinny little
island,
weird island
between
in between
Manhattan and Queens.
Yeah, it's strange.
You can visit it off the F train. Folks.
It's really weird being there, actually. Anyways, without further ado.
When I call you.
Tell us the name again.
Of the tune? It's called When I Call You.
Thanks. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with our in-studio musical guest, Tom Larson of People vs. Larson. You got to get...
This song is called Let's Not by Shadowbox. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Brooklyn Slate Company is a collaborative effort from Brooklyn graphic designer Sean Tice and Parsons graduate student Christy Hedeka. After visiting Christy's family slate quarry in upstate New York in the spring of 2009, the two grabbed a few pieces for use as all-purpose boards back home in Brooklyn. They found a number of purposes for the slate and began gifting pieces to friends. The response was so overwhelmingly positive that the two struck out to produce a line of slate products. They now make regular trips to the family quarry in upstate New York to hand-pick their favorite pieces of black and red slate. Some of the slate is sourced from the quarry graveyard, a collection of odd-shaped pieces that were ultimately destined to be ground for use as road cover or baseball diamonds. They then transport the pieces to their studio in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where they do additional cutting and clean the stone to be food slate. Every single piece of packaging that comes with their products, from the envelope to the burlap bag, can be repurposed for other uses. The end result is a product completely unique in cut, shape, color, and overall presentation. For more information and to order, visit brooklynslate.com. Now through December, enjoy 10% off your purchase at brooklynslate.com with discount code HERITAGE.
Welcome back to Metropolitan Ave. I'm your host, DJ Lady DM. Thanks for keeping your digital dial tuned to Brooklyn. We'll be taking live calls at 718-497-2128 for the last 8 minutes of our broadcast. If you have questions for our guests, dial in. The number again is 718-497-2128. You can also email us your question at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Back to Tom.
Yes.
Your bio states the following: the blues is a relevant music for the time we live in, and the People versus Larson plays it with an energy that is unmatched. Can you explain what you mean by that first statement?
Yes. Well, you have to mention that the blues is relevant, I think, because it is an older music, which is not, especially in New York City and the Northeast and stuff like that, it's not as present, you know, as it used to be, you know, I would say. You know, it's not like there's a ton of blues clubs in New York or something. And it's not, maybe it's not the music that people, when they turn on their iPods, it's what they're listening to right away, you know? But as, you know, I was telling you before I went on my own search of, like, what did it for me, you know? And I don't really care about what other people like that much. I just care about what I like. I'm the type of person that sifts through everything to try to find the secret things that are really hip, you know? And that, like, for me, as I went back farther and farther in the history of the music and examined the meaning of it and just felt the power of it, you know, I really think that it still has not finished its purpose, you know, in our society. You know,
what was the purpose that you
found? I'm not going to come out and say that I think it has a real specific purpose, mm-hmm. but I think that in general, the blues exists as an art form and medium to create empathy between people, get you feel what I'm feeling, you know, and I think that helps just promote understanding between people, you know, and it's meant to be a healing music, and it just has... when it's done the right way, it can just be such a vessel for your feelings, you know, which I think is important. So that's what we try to do with our band.
I love the name of the band and understand there may be an interesting story behind it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to read from a document I found online. And the people of the state of New York, plaintiff versus Tom Larson, defendant.
Yeah.
This was what, in 2000, July 30th, 2010. It talks about defendants are each charged with violating section blah, 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 for allegedly displaying and offering for sale condoms on the street without a general vendor's license.
They're leaving out an important detail there. I'm getting to it.
There's a lot of text. I'm like picking the best bits. Specifically, Defendant Larson argues that the novelty condoms fall within the written matter exception specified in administrative code. Basically, some argument about that selling condoms on the street is under protected by the First Amendment. And then they talk about some underlying effects. They get into specifics. They say that they observed Larson at the intersection of Broadway and Canal Street displaying and offering for sale Obama condoms and Palin condoms.
Yeah.
They say the Obama condom wrapper's beard and image of President Barack Obama in front of the White House with a banner heading, "Hope is not a form of protection." The message is explained on the reverse side of the wrapper as a call to action for the Obama administration that hope is not enough and responsibility is needed. I want to read this last part as well. Another Obama condom titled "The Ultimate Stimulus Package" is meant to call attention to the severity of our economic state and to get people laid, not laid off. I would love to read
more of this. I actually
wrote
that, some of that. That part that you just...
It's this. If you guys want to look it up,
I helped write the blurbs on the back of the condoms, actually.
If you want to look it up online, this document's amazing. But I want to get a bit to the story behind it.
Yeah. Like I said, 3 years ago, right? I started playing music more, right? That's July 2010.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, after court that day, couldn't go out to sell condoms, you know. So I decided at that point that I was going to do, you know, whatever I need to do to make money playing guitar, you know. So when I first, you know, got to the city, I didn't have any gigs, you know. So you had to figure out what you're going to do. I didn't really want to get a normal job. But, you know, unemployment was really bad at that time. It wasn't even easy to get a job. So I found this, I met this guy who created that company. And also through my friend Cyril. And we were actually partners in selling that first summer of 2009.
So during elections, it seems
like.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was cool. And we'd just stand on the street corner in Times Square and down in Soho like that and just, you know, give people one-liners as they walk by. I was like, "Hello, sir. Would you like to feel, you know, this ultimate stimulus package, you know? Like, you know, it's flavored with hope, you know, for your long and hard times, you know. Got the whole election collection, you know." So it was, you know, I definitely learned how to sell things.
Why did you decide to transfer that actually to the name of your music project?
Well, I just thought it was ironic because when they were arresting me on the street corner there on Canal and Broadway, all the people were booing them, you know. All the people that I just made laugh, you know, and met and talked to and sold stuff to, they were there, you know. And actually, there's like, I knew all the cops, obviously. These were undercover police cops. Police undercover officers.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got arrested by undercover cops. And you know, I had like a big sign on my back, you know. And actually, the beat cop from the neighborhood came up to me and tried to protect me because he asked me all my documents and then walked away, you know. Because I was actually pretty legit. I mean, I had my tax ID, and I always carried around the law with me, that like how I was arguing in court there, you know. Because there was a specific case that said you can sell items bearing political messages, and you don't need a license for it, because it's protected by freedom of speech, you know. So now I explained that to them.
And of course, I'm sure that went down well.
and then he actually took my condoms from me and opened one up and unfurled it right there on the street. And he's like, "There's no political messages on this condom. Put your hands behind your back."
Is there a photo of there somewhere? There's a photo of that online.
Someday when I'm famous, you're going to see a million photos of me. Because I sold a lot of condoms, but more people want to take picture of me selling my condoms and they want to buy my condoms. So someday you're just going to be a whole book about them.
You're going to hire a team picture to delete them from the internet, possibly at that point in time, but we'll wait until then.
I'm not ashamed, you know.
It's an amazing story, and I stumbled upon it actually just trying to find your Facebook and ask you to come down to the show. I was like, is this for real? Oh, cool. He's like,
that's why I did it, because I wanted it so that if anybody was searching at the court case, because people actually look about it, like in law school.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine who was playing at Sleep No More at the McKittrick Hotel.
Yeah.
In the house band, he came up to me and he was like, yo, man, my girlfriend showed me this article. She's
real.
In law school. And he was like, I was like, that's my boy. I know him.
That's quite a story to come across when searching, you know, for contact info for a band. Speaking about shows and Sleep No More, where can people hear you in the city?
Okay.
And where can they get info about your upcoming shows and
best
events?
Thing is facebook.com/people versus Larson.
How do you spell it? Tell us.
People versus, like, VS with no period, and then Larson, LARSEN.
EN, not O-N.
That's important too.
Cool. Definitely. What about upcoming shows?
We're playing on Halloween at Rockwood 2 at 7:30. We're gonna be a part of a couple Halloween shows at the McKittrick Hotel, and of course we're at the McKittrick Hotel every Friday and Saturday at 2 a.m.
You're in a specific place though.
We're in the Mandalay.
Yeah, so you hold down the Mandalay, which opens at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
How long are you guys on?
Till about 3:15.
3:15, okay. Mm-hmm. And they open until what time?
They open
until what time? Like they close at 6 a.m. or close when you guys are done?
No. They kick people out pretty shortly after we're done.
So if you guys are out in New York City Saturday morning or Sunday morning to 2 a.m., you can head down to McKittrick Hotel and hear Tom. Mm-hmm. I've done that plenty of times, actually. Last but not least, I have a food question for you. What's the perfect pre or post show meal for you after a long set?
Man, sometimes you'll see me rolling into Sleep No More with some vegetable juice. That's the best thing. There's a guy on 28th and 8th right by the train before I walk in. He makes, you know, juice 24/7.
Where on 28th and 8th? Sorry, what's the name of this spot?
It's just a corner store. I don't know what the name is.
He's open at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Doing juice. Thank you for the tip.
Yeah, when you need veggie juice, late nights, this guy's got it for you.
And what's your favorite mix?
You got to get just mostly vegetables, really.
Anything.
Mostly vegetables and ginger. You need the ginger because the ginger gets your blood flowing, you know? You don't want to eat, you know, before you play too much. I mean, you know, a little bit, but, like, you don't want to eat, like, a, you know, jerk chicken and mac and cheese, you know?
Some people don't. Awesome. Right, so that's unfortunately all the time we have. I'd definitely like to thank our musical guests. I'm like pointing at you. Can you play me some outro music?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
I got you.
We agreed to this before the show. That's all the time we have tonight. Thanks again to our musical guests, Tom Larson, Layla Salam, our videographer, and Jack Inslee for engineering today's show. You'll find tonight's broadcast of Metropolitan Ave and many other great shows archived on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also visit Heritage Radio Network on iTunes and Stitcher. See you next week, and thanks for listening. It's all yours.
Well, I wish that I was a catfish so I could swim way down in the sea. I said, you know, I'd have all your pretty ones sending out a line for me. said, you know, the river runs into the ocean. Ocean runs into the sea. And if I can't have my sweet woman, someone sure got to bury me. I said, you know, I wish that I was a catfish in the deep ocean. So I said goodbye, babe. If you wanna call it done, I said, you know, I'm just gonna make my way down Highway 61, 'cause I wish I was a cat swimming in the deep sea. I said, you know, I'd have you pretty looking women sending out a line, sending out a line for me.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.